Call the Community and Regional Affairs Committee committee meeting to order at 8:01 a.m. on Thursday, February 8th. Joining me today, we have Representative Talrico, Representative Christ Tompkins, Representative Lincoln, and Representative Drummond. Our staff today are Lori Rowland from House Records, Patrick Courtnage, my committee aide, and Max Stanley, our teleconference operator. We are also joined by Representative Sadler, and in the audience we have Representative Tuck. Would members please silence their cell phones? We do have a quorum to conduct business, and we have three items on the agenda today, starting with House Bill 298, number of Superior Court judges, followed by 269, distillery licenses, services on premise, etc., and House Bill 267, release of hunting fishing records to municipalities. Our first order of business is House Bill 298. This is the first hearing on this bill. We'll hear public testimony on the bill today and defer action to a later date. Would the bill sponsor, Nancy Mead, come to the testifier table? Please identify yourself on the record and begin your presentation.
Thank you. Good morning, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Nancy Mead. I'm the general counsel for the Alaska court system, and I want to thank you. I'm very appreciative, and the court system as a whole is appreciative that you're hearing HB 298 today. Very briefly, what this bill accomplishes, and all it accomplishes, is increasing the allotted number of Superior Court judges by one and specifying that that one extra seat will sit in the first judicial district, which is generally Southeast Alaska. And as I'll explain in a few moments, and as you know from your packet, this bill has a zero fiscal note. So let me just say preliminarily, this is a little bit different from most of your bills in that the statutory change is being proposed not by one of you, but by the court system. So you'll see that this is done rules by request. You're used to that for the governor's bills, and this is how our branch can introduce a bill as well. We very rarely seek to have a statute changed because usually it involves policy that is squarely within your branch of the government to determine. This is an administrative matter and is set by statute, so we need to ask for the statutory change in this instance. The last time the court system carried a bill was in 2011, and it was to amend this very same statute to change the number of judges from 40 to 42 at that time, and those two judges were assigned to Anchorage. Typically, of course, the court system, like agencies, handles its own staffing and classification of employees. So why does AS 2210-120 set the number of Superior Court judges and require us to get your authorization to increase that? That's because the Constitution says so. Article 4 says that the number of Superior Court judges will be set by statute. So that is your thing to do. That is not true, by the way, for district court judges, which will become relevant in a few minutes as I explain what we hope to do. So the problem, as you heard yesterday from the Chief Justice in his State of the Judiciary speech, is that the Juneau Superior Court is overburdened with casework relative to the number of Superior Court judges, and it has been this way for many years. It has the second highest number of Superior Court case filings per Superior Court judge in the state. The highest is Anchorage, and in some ways it's not a fair comparison because Anchorage has so many other resources and is set up quite differently. Those judges handle either just criminal or just civil, just for administrative purposes, so that isn't quite an appropriate comparison. Anchorage right now doesn't need a new Superior Court judge like Juneau does. So that means that cases, because they're overburdened and there are high numbers, despite a judge's best efforts, are being slowed down. There might not be time on calendars to schedule hearings as quickly as we would like them to be, and written work products don't come out as quickly as we would like them to come out. And the court has recognized this for some time. In 2014 and again in 2015, we had a capital budget request for an extra courtroom in the Diamond Courthouse across the street. That was not funded. And the same in 2016, we put it together with extra courtrooms in Juneau as a capital budget request, which was not funded. That could have alleviated some of the problem by allowing a visiting judge to at least hold hearings at the same time as the sitting judges were holding hearings. So that wasn't successful. So as a result, the Juneau caseload has been redistributed a little bit. And specifically, the presiding judge of the first district, each of the four districts has one presiding superior court judge. He lives in and works in Ketchikan. He has been traveling up here to help alleviate the caseload problem. He has sort of taken it upon himself to lower the pressure on his Juneau colleagues by taking on about a third of the Juneau civil cases, taking all of the administrative agency appeals that come to the Juneau Superior Court, and taking periodic big criminal cases, because sometimes multi-day trials and whatnot are very time-consuming for a judge, so he can alleviate the pressure a little bit that way. For example, a big sexual assault case or sexual assault of a minor case, and he's been doing that for a number of years. But what that means is that he's working very unsustainable hours, because his Ketchikan cases don't stop coming in when he's up here for a two-week felony trial or something like that. And so his own assigned cases in Ketchikan he has to handle on weekends or something. So he's willing to do it, and he has been doing it, but it is not a model that we want to continue. And I'm sure he would like a Saturday at home once in a while. And therefore, we were looking for a better solution. So a better solution has arisen mostly because of some lucky timing. A district court judge in Juneau right now has announced his retirement for the summer. So with that district court retiring, a district court judge retiring, the Supreme Court thought this was the perfect time to just convert that seat into a superior court seat. So I'll back up a little bit and say there are superior courts and district courts at the trial level. Superior court judges are judges of general jurisdiction. They can handle anything that arises. And district court judges have limited jurisdiction. They can handle just some things. Mostly, superior court judges handle felonies, domestic relations like child custody and divorces, probate matters such as involuntary mental commitments and guardianships, and civil cases if the amount in controversy is over $100,000. District court judges have lower jurisdiction. They can handle misdemeanors only. They don't do probate work, they don't do domestic relations work, and they do civil cases that are less than $100,000. They do minor offenses and handle domestic violence protective orders. So right now, Juneau has two superior and two district, and with that one district court judge retiring, the plan is to just convert that seat. And the reason this works very well right now, and again, I think the Chief Justice talked about this quite a bit yesterday and how important and this is and how good the timing is that we can do that with almost no fiscal impact on anybody. We do have a zero fiscal note, and the reason for that is that the new judge will simply sit in the same office as the now retiring district court judge, use the same computer and supplies, etc. We already have judicial assistants and resources available. We don't need new security officers or anything like that. The only difference in cost, actual cost, is the difference in salary between a district court judge, which has a lower salary, and a superior court judge. So that difference, along with mandatory deductions and will cost about $35,500, and the court system is going to absorb that cost, which is why you see a zero. And we can absorb that through attrition and savings we've achieved in other areas. And, for example, we have positions that are in our long-term vacancy pool and are unfilled, and those savings can be used to address this $35,000 wage difference between the two judgeships. So with that, I don't know if that was too quick or too superficial, but I'm happy to answer any further questions about what the plan is and how it would work.
Is your question from Representative Christ Tompkins?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Good morning, Nancy, thank you for the presentation. I thought one of the best bill presentations I've seen in a long time came by way of the State of Judiciary address yesterday. So I feel quite schooled up on this issue and very supportive as well, and impressed, per usual, with the court system's focus on frugality and efficiency and cost neutrality. Perhaps needless to say, I support the legislation, being from Southeast Alaska and having heard about the backlog in the Juneau courthouse from a lot of people, both who practice law and also have been clients or just regular people trying to work their way through the system. The one question I do have is, realizing that we're aiming for zero fiscal note, that times are tough, that budgets are tight, do you think it's possible that in the future it would make sense to come back and look for this new superior court judge to have clerks that all of the superior court judges in Alaska have?
Through the chair, Representative Kreis Tompkins, that is the one comment I've heard about that people had questions about, and that is, as I said, this new superior court judge replacing the district court judge would be sharing the judicial assistants and two law clerks that the superior court has. Everyone thinks that will be a fine solution and will work out well, because adding a judge will bring their filings per superior court judge down significantly, so they'd no longer even be in the top five. And two law clerks are considered by the district to be sufficient to handle that caseload. So the Juneau judges are on board with that, the presiding judge is on board, and the Supreme Court thinks it will work out well. But your question was whether we would ever come back and ask for perhaps additional resources there. Our plan is not to do that. If we do need an additional law clerk, we would hope to be able to, do that by moving around positions that are already existing. I won't promise that will never happen. If the state becomes flush, you know, there might be a different approach to how we do things. But at this point, there's no plan to ask in the future. But, of course, we'll monitor it. And I do also want to add, it's not unheard of that judges share law clerks. In Ketchikan, for example, there's one law clerk for two superior court judges. In Anchorage, the presiding judge does not have a law clerk and can use other law clerks' time as deemed necessary. So I hope that responds to your question.
Yeah, thank you.
We have a question from Representative Sadler. Rep. Sadler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Mead, how much of the total savings has the court system achieved from that 5% reduction in employees? And how much of that savings will be taken up by the additional cost of the Superior Court judge over the District Court judge?
Through the chair, Representative Sadler, the court system has lost about 11% of its workforce. Mm-hmm. And a number of those positions have been in the First Judicial District. And we have completely eliminated about 45 positions, just eliminated those. So we have about 32 in our long-term vacancy pool. And the actual cost savings of all of those I do not have at my fingertips. I do know, though, for example, our one administrator, area court administrator for the First Judicial District, about 8-9 months ago, his assistant retired, and that savings to the court, that position went unfilled. It's in our long-term vacancy pool. That's about a $70,000 position when you add up all the health benefits and other costs associated with the position. So you just take that one, the additional cost of this reclassification of the judge is about $35,000, which is about only half of one. So we're seeing this as a fairly minor expense relative to the overall costs.
So, yeah, but I would be interested to know the universal numbers. I appreciate the give and take of one and two positions. But if you do have what I'll call headroom in your budget, certainly you're not flush, but if you, I'd just like to know how much headroom you have to work with and how much will this take up. Different question. So if you can provide that to the committee, that would be helpful.
Yes.
Thank you.
We have a question from Representative Drummond, then we'll come back to you, Rep. Sadler.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The court's budget has been cut by about 11%, and you've permanently lost about 45 positions. Has the caseload decreased by a similar amount, or does it stay the same, or has it continued to increase?
Through the chair, Representative Drummond, I hope I didn't misspeak, but we've lost about 11% of our staff over the last several years, and our budget has gone down kind of accordingly. That's how we have been able to, you know, take 3%, 4% cuts over the last several years, like everybody else. But and I lost track of your question. Oh, no, the case filings have not significantly changed. They fluctuate each year a little bit. And each year you'll hear, oh, this year the felony filings are up. Last year, as a matter of fact, criminal case filings were down. In Juneau, the probate case filings since FY13 have increased about 70%, and our China child in need of case filings have increased statewide and in Juneau as well. So no, as we absorbed those budget cuts and cut our staff, generally case filings are, they fluctuate, as I say, but no, we haven't seen a significant reduction in case filings.
Follow-up?
Brief follow-up. So it's taking longer to resolve cases?
Through the chair, Representative Drummond, in some cases, yes. In some cases, not. But, yes, it can be a little bit slower when you have more case filings and more work to do per person.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Representative Sadler.
Thank you. Through the chair, Ms. Mead. Why will the remaining single district court judge in Southeast not be overwhelmed if they're taking over responsibility for what had previously been done by two district judges?
Through the chair, Representative Sadler, the two district court judges, when one leaves, there's another position called a magistrate judge, and right now the magistrate judge is doing a lot of preparatory work for the two superior court judges, getting the case files ready, doing preliminary hearings. Now, that person doesn't have jurisdiction to resolve those types of cases for the superior court, but he is getting things ready. And that is what some magistrate judges do around the state. But that person will transition to taking on more of a traditional magistrate judge caseload, which is district court work. Typically, the minor offenses, which are tickets, citations, traffic, or fish and game citations. So that magistrate judge will take on some of the district court work that is there. But in addition, superior court judges, and these three will, can handle district court matters, not vice versa. District judges can't go above their jurisdiction, but these three superior court judges will be handling some of the district court caseload. And again, that's not unprecedented. In Sitka, for example, we have a superior court judge and no district court judge, so that judge handles district court and superior court matters. And that is a kind of a caseload distribution effort that will be worked out. And by the way, this three superior, one district, and one magistrate judge is the very same model that we have in Kenai with very nearly identical case filing numbers. And that seems to work efficiently.
Follow up, Rep. Sadler.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So I want to make sure that we're not just shifting things around. So I think I understand you to say that some of the district court work will be retained by the superior court justice who ascends to superior court status. Is that correct?
Through the chair, yes. Representative Sadler, when we have three superior court judges, if we get the three superior court judges, those three will all be doing some district court work.
Okay. And follow-up?
Follow-up, Representative Sadler.
So what will happen to the work? I want to make sure we're not just shifting and going to leave some square uncovered. The magistrate is going to be exercising his or her powers a little bit more. I'm not quite sure how the magistrate is going to be stepping out to do the district court work. Will there be any additional credentialing or training or cost?
Through the chair, Representative Sadler, no and no. No additional cost or training, really. Magistrate judges around the state are hired to help with district court work and, as needed, do this preparatory work for the superior court. As it happens, this person has mostly done the superior court work because that's where the need has been in Juneau, but he is fully capable and trained to handle some of the district court work like they do around the state. And as I say, as an example, it would largely be some of the minor offenses that come in, traffic trials and things like that.
Okay. To the chair.
Representative Sadler.
I just want to make sure. So I'm wondering how you're spinning gold out of straw here. You're going to be covering more work with the same number of people. Just one more higher-paid judge position. It's an interesting model. I wish we could replicate it elsewhere. I just want to make sure there's no work being left uncovered, and what the net gain is for the court system.
Through the chair, Representative Sadler, I guess in sum, it'll be the same number of cases. It'll be people who can do more to handle the right types of cases. So right now, the Superior Court is, as I say, getting bottlenecked, and if that one judge could handle some of their work instead, that will alleviate the pressure, and it will also alleviate the traveling judge having to come up here, and it will change what the magistrate judge focuses most of his time on.
Okay. And it's good to conclude that line of question.
Follow up. Representative Sadler.
So I guess I'll amplify the question that my colleague to my right asked. Do you anticipate the court system coming back to ask for either new Superior Court judges or other changes in district judges to Superior or more magistrates, either in First District or any other judicial districts around the state?
Through the chair, we have no plans to ask for further judge changes around the state.
What about magistrates and so forth?
And through the chair, we have no plans to ask for additional magistrates, although, we are always moving people around. It's only the Superior Court judge where we have to get authorization from the legislature to add that position.
Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Meads. Seeing no further questions from the committee, we thank you. And I will now open public testimony. Is there anyone in the room who wishes to testify? Seeing none, and seeing no one online, I will close public testimony. What we have before us is, in my opinion, a rather uncontroversial bill, the zero fiscal note, and one further committee of referral. If it is the will of the committee, I would like to move this bill out today. May I have a motion?
Mr. Chair. Mm-hmm. So I'd like to move House Bill 298 from committee with individual recommendations and the attached zero fiscal note.
I'll object for purposes of discussion, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Representative Tallarico. Representative Tallarico.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I appreciate Ms. Mead. I really appreciate a very thorough explanation. That was, I will agree with my colleague, that one of the better presentations I've heard. And I really don't, I think after the explanation that we heard yesterday in the state of the judiciary and the questions you've answered today, I don't see this as being controversial at all. Probably resolves huge issues in this particular judicial district. So I do appreciate this coming forward right now. It seems like the timing is perfect, Mr. Chairman. So with that, unless someone else wants to, I will remove my objection. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Representative Tallarico. Seeing no further objection, we'll take a brief hearing on the bill. Moves from committee with individual recommendations and attached zero fiscal note. We'll now take a brief at ease to sign the committee document. I call the committee back to order. Our next order of business is House Bill 269, Distillery Licenses, Service on Premise. This is the second hearing of the bill, and we have already heard the sponsor's presentation and taken public testimony. It has a further referral to Labor and Commerce. At this time, we'll consider amendments. Are there any amendments? Seeing none.
Mr. Chairman, I move House Bill 269 from committee with individual recommendations in the attached zero fiscal note.
Jack. Thank you, Representative Sadler. Would you like to speak to your objection?
No, just want to make sure that people have the opportunity to discuss the issue if they want to.
Thank you, Representative Sadler. And I'll take advantage of the opportunity you have afforded us.
No charge.
The bill before us is a very simple bill designed to address what some consider a a premature or an unfair ruling, which could adversely affect many businesses in the state of Alaska, which are operating under good faith. I do not think that the bill in front of us is the final word on this section of regulation. It is, however, a fix which is needed rather urgently. And thus, I cannot help but to support it. Would anyone else like to comment? Representative Sadler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have to say, having heard the testimony of all sides on this, I'm still concerned about the blurring of the lines, the existential lines, between what is a bar, a beverage dispensary licensee that can serve mixed drinks, and a distillery, a manufacturer who has a side business of providing tastes of the liquor, but which is going to expand that to also provide mixed drinks. So I'm concerned that's a blurring of the lines. I'm not persuaded that that's not a trend that may continue in the future. The same arguments that may be found to be compelling to allow this would also be equally as compelling to allow the distilleries to provide entertainment or other accoutrements and accessories that might make them even more like full BDL licensees. So I'm still concerned about this. Thank you.
Representative Tellerico.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I share those same concerns. I know that we've certainly have had contact from people that actually share those concerns as well. And I do think there's a little bit of gray area here. It's my expectation that the next committee of referral will work on this diligently as well. But I am quite concerned about that. I think it likely not that we're not appropriate, but it is appropriately moving forward to committee of jurisdiction where I think it probably belongs.
Thank you, Representative Tellerico. Would any other members of the committee like to comment before the vote? Representative Drummond.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Having visited two of the distilleries in question during the last year and finding the selection of liquor to be limited to what they produce on premises, in addition to mixers in the case of the distillery here in downtown Juneau, I don't have a problem with what this bill is requesting to do. The hours are limited. The facilities are limited to what they can entertain. And I think we heard plenty of compelling testimony from those who have made significant investments in building and operating and opening distilleries and contributing to the diversity of manufacturing in the state of Alaska. And I support this bill, Mr. Chairman. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Drummond. Are there any further comments from members of the committee before we move to a vote? Seeing none, Representative Sadler, is your objection maintained?
No. Go ahead and vote. Just do individual rights.
Thank you. There being no further objection, HB 269 moves from committee with individual recommendations and attached zero fiscal note. We'll now take a brief at ease to sign the committee documents. I call the committee back to order. Our next order of business is House Bill 267, Release Hunting and Fishing Records to Municipalities. This is the second hearing on the bill, and we've already heard the sponsor's presentation and taken public testimony. It does have a further referral to resources. There is a proposed committee substitute. Can I have a motion to adopt the CS as a working document?
Mr. Chair. I move that the House Community and Regional Affairs Committee adopt CS version 30-LS0808J as our working document.
I'll object for the purposes of discussion. Would the bill's sponsor's aide, Mr. Timothy Clark, please present the CS?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, My name is Tim Clark. I'm staff to Representative Edgman. I thank the committee on his behalf for bringing this bill up again. He couldn't be here this morning. The CS for House Bill 267 allows municipalities that levy a tax on hunting and fishing activities in their jurisdictions access to records and reports submitted by guiding outfits to the state. They would be granted access for the purpose of verifying taxes payable, and all such reports that they would access in all cases, the confidentiality would be maintained. The CS includes a change as a result of an amendment from the previous meeting that clarified in Section 1 that confidentiality.
Excellent. Are there any questions from the members of the committee? Representative Sadler, then Representative Lincoln.
Thank you. Through the chair, Mr. Clark, could you expand a little bit on the changes between the original bill and the CS regarding confidentiality?
Mr. Clark.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Sadler. The bill was amended to clarify that hunting and records and reports released to municipalities for the purpose of verifying taxes payable will be kept confidential. It specifically on line one, I'm sorry, that's page one, lines 5 through 13. They were deleted and replaced with what is essentially now the entirety of Section 1 makes more explicit the requirement on the part of the municipality to maintain the confidentiality of the records.
And just for the record, and so the sanctions for violating that confidentiality are not changed. Those are as exist in current law, correct?
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Clark? Representative Sadler, that is correct, and the consequences are quite serious in criminal law.
Thank you, Mr. Clark. Representative Lincoln.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. That was actually my question, is what the sanctions are if the confidentiality is breached.
Mr. Chairman, Clark, if you'd like to expand on that.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Lincoln, in the committee or in the bill packet, there should be two areas of statute provided. In Title 11, under criminal law, 11.56.850, criminal misconduct, and 11.56.860, misuse of confidential information, and both breaches of those laws are both described as Class A misdemeanors.
Thank you, Mr. Clark. Are there any further questions? Do you like Anetti's?
No, I got another question.
Okay.
Representative Lincoln. The nature of the information, is it purely financial, or are they disclosing like hunting areas or fishing locations and sort of proprietary information that would be important for guides to kind of maintain some confidentiality over, or is it purely financial?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Lincoln, a lot of the information provided to the state by the guiding outfitters is considered by many outfitters sort of proprietary to their operations. A lot of them have hunting areas, fishing holes, you might say, that might be hot spots that they wouldn't want to advertise to their competitors in terms of knowing the area quite well and knowing, great places to go where their clients are going to be successful.
And we did find the legal consequences for the breach of confidentiality. I see that in both cases, the misuse or official misconduct is a Class A misdemeanor.
That's correct, Mr. Chairman.
Are there any further questions from members of the committee about the CS? Seeing none, thank you, Mr. Clark. Representative Briefides. We are back on the record. Seeing no further questions from members of the committee, I will remove my objection. The question before the committee is the adoption of the proposed CS. Is there any further objection? Representative Sadler.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just want to object on the record. Understand that there one of our committee members who is unable to be here today to offer his amendment, LS0808/J.4, and I understand the intention is to for him to offer that during the next committee referral. So just want to make sure we're not blown by the amendment without the record noting it. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Sadler, and that is correct.
If I may interrupt, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Clark.
Our bill drafter in Legislative Legal Services suggested that we put a statement on the record to, in the hopes of avoiding any future legal uncertainties because of in Section 1, that section having been repealed and reenacted.
Certainly. And I have a copy of that here, and if any members of the committee take issue, we can certainly discuss it. But to ensure that there are no future legal uncertainties regarding repeal and reenactment of AS0854760B, I would like to put on the record that federal law enforcement and other law enforcement authorities will continue to have access to hunting records submitted to the state prior to the enactment of this legislation, should that come to pass. And we do have Mr. Elpheus Bullard, the drafting attorney, on teleconference for any questions regarding this statement. Are there any questions? Seeing none. Representative Sadler.
I remove my objection.
Thank you, Rep. Sadler. And having no amendments before us, apart from the one earlier discussed, is there any further discussion? Representative Chris Tompkins.
Great bill. I'll be telling my communities about this. I think there's going to be a lot of interest in communities that have a lot of hunting and fishing activity, and makes a lot of sense.
Thank you, Representative Chris Tompkins. Are there any further comments from members of the committee? Representative Tallarico.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And just to say that I did have contact with someone who was somewhat uncomfortable with this, and I have some previous experience in municipal government, and I would just like to say that there's no nefarious intent by municipal government to keep accurate records. In fact, most of the municipalities in the state try and follow the general accounting standards, the GASB laws, which quite honestly does require very accurate record keeping, and accurate record keeping when it comes to a municipal audit is also incredibly important. I will say that at least my experience has been is that the fear that municipalities may be loose, so to say, with confidential records, I would say is completely inaccurate, and they're very well guarded, in my experience. So, I'm very comfortable with the fact that I would at least tell folks that have a concern about that's certainly not a concern that I would share at all. So, thank you, Mr. Chairman.
And thank you, Representative Tallarico. Are there any further comments from members of the committee? Or any further discussion, any questions, either for the bill sponsor, for Mr. Elpheus Bullard, for Tom Bookover, from Fish and Game in Anchorage, or from Susan Edwards, the finance officer of Lake and Peninsula Borough? Seeing none, what is the will of the committee?
Mr. Chair, I move the House Community and Regional Affairs CS for House Bill 267, version 30-LS0808J from committee with individual recommendations and the forthcoming updated fiscal note.
Mr. Chair, forthcoming updated.
Mr. Clark.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Sadler, with the clarification of the strict confidentiality that the CS describes, it's our understanding that the Department of Commerce fiscal note is going to be considerably reduced. Previously, they've been concerned about the confidentiality matter and thought that vast amounts of information in certain hunting records would have to be manually redacted, which would have cost them a lot of time and resources. Under the bill as written now, they're comfortable that that kind of activity won't be required, and it will bring down the cost significantly.
Mr. Chair, I can certainly understand that happening. We discussed that fact at the previous, but when I hear that we're going to approve a pick and a poke, I just get a little nervous. So I take some comfort knowing this is going to go to another committee, and I will check to make sure that that thing, fiscal note, is appropriately modified. Thanks.
All right. The question before the committee is moving CS for House Bill 267. Is there any objection? Hearing none. HB 267 moves from committee with individual recommendations and forthcoming fiscal note. We'll now take a brief at ease to sign the committee documents. I call the committee back to order. That was the final item on the agenda for today. Our next meeting will be Saturday, February 10th at 10 a.m. This meeting is adjourned.
Mr. Chair, the purpose for the Saturday meeting, we discussed the last subcommittee meeting. What's the purpose of the Saturday meeting? We've gotten through a lot of work here today, so I'm wondering what the need is to meet again Saturday.
Brief at ease. Coming back to order, in answer to your question, Representative Sadler, after consultation with my staff, at present we're scheduled for a subcommittee meeting from 9 to 10, and then during the 10 o'clock meeting we've got House Bill 264, which concerns disposable bags. And, you know, if in consultation with Subcommittee Chair Kawasaki, he should decide to ask for us to push our meeting back an hour so that he can push his back an hour, I'd certainly be amenable.
You'd have a second here.
All right. Is there any further business before the committee? Seeing none, this meeting is adjourned at 8:55 a.m.